Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod, where we talk to all the interesting people of the San Luis Valley. Joining me today in our studio on the south side is my good friend Greg Heigl. It's good to see you, Greg. How are you, man?
Pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
End of summer, end of August. How's your summer been?
Good, busy. Just weather, you know how I am. A lot of short water. We worked pretty hard this summer getting things wet. But actually, they're getting ready to go to the mountains, so that's a...
Bring the cattle down?
No, we're going to go. I'm going to take some time off, Chris.
Oh, okay. So you're going away from the ranch to take a break.
I haven't done that much. I've done it twice this summer, actually.
Yeah. What's the cattle situation like this year on the Heigl Ranch?
Good. Grass is good. We're going to make it through, putting up hay to get it through the winter. That'll be a good thing. Market's good. Market's out, you know, it's out crazy. It's out outrageous, actually.
What is that? Mean or translate into for you as a cattle rancher when you say market's good? I know for consumers that translates into something else, right?
Yes, high market.
Right. So I don't want to go there yet, but just explain first.
Well,
how that translates into your business.
Actually, if you want to know the truth, the last 2 years, the cows have probably paid their bills, which I signed my name to the dotted line in 21, and it's probably the only 2 years that didn't need money from hay or some other to keep them going. You know what I mean? They're actually going to make a little bit to pay for
themselves
being down a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And that to pay for their feed. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this.
What's the reason?
All the numbers are down. Cow-calf operations are down. Feeders are down. Imports are down with what's happening in the
tariffs. U.S.
Yeah, tariffs and stuff like that. So
it's making it better to be a domestic cattle rancher. The tariffs make it better to be a domestic cattle rancher like yourself.
Oh, it helps. It helps because there's a lot of imported beef, but the drought. I was reading an article the other day that the drought's a big factor in this because there's no places to run cattle. You know, there's no grass and pasture to do them, so people are cutting their herds, and I didn't really realize that across the United States because usually one place is good and one place is bad. But the drought over the United States cut the numbers 8%.
So that creates a supply-demand issue in favor of a cattle rancher like yourself that's continuing with heads of cattle, can continue with your cost to feed those cattle. That's the conditions today are creating some of the better conditions you've been working in since your life, 65 years.
Yeah, it's catching up now. Like I said, the last 2 years have been that way, where your inputs aren't as high as what you're making. But, you know, with the cost of parts and everything that's happening now, it's kind of leveling back to where it don't matter if they're 50-cent cattle or $4 cattle. The cost to produce them is, you know, relative there. I've been worried about it actually for a while because if you get $8 hamburger, who's going to buy $8 hamburger?
Right. Right.
They'll go eat fish and, you know, it's good. Don't get me wrong. I'm enjoying every bit of it, but,
as a rancher, as someone that grows cattle, you don't control at all the price at the market. You take what the market is going to bear, but you're not, I mean, if price of hamburger is going up, price of steak, that's not necessarily on you.
No, it's not. But the only control I have is there's two ways you can sell your animal is you can go to a live market, just haul it to the sale barn or something like that. Or you can go a contract way. And, either way, you're riding the gamble. I like to go live markets, especially now because the market's trending up.
Right. You're getting more at the livestock.
Yeah, so if I was on a video auction today and sold my cattle at a certain price and delivered them. And usually you deliver in November, October, November, December. Market might take a huge jump in November. And if you're heading to the live market, you know, you're going to make a little more. But you're guaranteed when you go to a video or however they sell internet now, there's a lot of that, a lot of video. You know, you're locked in on that day.
Interesting.
And some of the videos, that's usually the highest market of the year. It's kind of a trend you can watch. There's a few places that have videos. There's several actually. But there's a few that you watch or that I watch, and they're usually in the month of July, and that'll kind of tell you what it's going to be
and like. Where it's trending.
Yeah, because they want those cattle delivered in, like I said, November, December, January.
Right.
Sometime in there.
It's interesting.
I sold on the internet for 20 years.
And you can tell who you're selling to on the internet in terms of the buyer, but you don't know where that buyer or who that buyer is buying for, or where that operation is that your cattle is headed to once you sell.
Right, exactly. There's even on the, either way, live market or internet, there's usually guys sitting around buying for people.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily go to the auction yourself, and he might be buying for guys in Greeley. He could be buying for guys in Oklahoma, and whatever that person wants, he'll buy them for that order. And then they'll be shipped to Oklahoma, California, you know, they can go quite a few places like that.
How do you present your cattle in that internet setting? You have your cattle at a auction, at a livestock, and they're streaming it and you can watch that? Or do you have to take a picture of your cattle and put them up so the buyer, potential buyer who's bidding, sees it? How does that work?
Well, both ways. Actually, now if you go to a live market, say Lahana's where I would take mine if I was going to a live market, they're on the internet. So you have people there
live. They're streaming through. Yeah, you can watch that wherever.
Live, and then you have the internet people. And they have, you know, they can tell and they'll say, you're on the internet now or you're live up there.
Yeah.
I just have a neighbor actually that he buys. He's a representative for a pretty big feeding operation in the United States, but he lives right across the river from me, and he's tied. Yeah, he's tied into him, and they might, if our calves are big enough, they might ship them directly to Lamar, to the big feedlot over there. Or if they're smaller that year, they'll keep them here and background them for 90 days till they're big enough to go over there. Or
that's interesting.
It's
the internet's really changed the world, huh?
In the cattle market, it has, or I would say any market like that. You know, that commodities market. Yeah, it's
that's interesting. Yeah. Greg and I are same age, same era, same. So we kind of go through these changes in life and marvel at times at all the things we've seen and all the changes we've seen over the past 65 years.
I've kind of reverted back to the live market though. In the last few years, I've done better taking that gamble, because the internet, when you do that, you take pictures in July. You were asking how well, we used to do it. We'd brand our calves, but the day we were branding, before we'd put the brand on them, we'd run them into a corral, you know, make sure the corral's looking nice and all that stuff. And then you'd run your animals past it, and they, you know, if you were selling 200, you tried to show 100 walking in front of you, you know, and show your class, your animal. But it's hard in July to say that calf is going to weigh 600 pounds on this date. So that's one thing I didn't like. Some years you have good grass, so your calves grow real good. Some years you have bad grass, and they're a little weaker. So, you know, you have only a little bit of avenue there to do that. But I've always been a live market. My dad ran auctions, you know, all of his life. So it's the thrill of the camel, you know. And not to show off, but it's fun to watch your animals walk in front of it. And then if they bring a lot of money, you can kind of strut a little bit.
I went to the SLV fair a couple of weeks back. And it's for those kids. That's what you're talking about. They really love showing their animals, whether it's the swines or the cattle or the sheep, and you see that when you're at that SLV fair, and you see the pride that those 4-H'ers take in, because they raised them to what you're saying. And it sounds like the same thing. When you're selling live, you have this pride of the calf you're presenting, or the cow you're presenting, the cattle you have, because it's yours and you took care of it.
It's your product. It's the same way, you know, I would think a potato guy would think the same way. You know, he's going to make a good crop and he's going to be sell it at the highest price he can get. That's just, that's how I learned to sell my cattle, actually, is through a live market. And if they looked good in that market and you could sell them quality like that, and they, you could tell when people start bidding on them that you're selling a good product. And that's how I learned. So I'd watch and make sure my animals wanted to look good walking through that that deal.
You said cattle's good. What about hay? What's hay this year?
You know, if you have really good hay and it tests real good, you'll do all right. As I think it's a little over $200 for, but any off quality hay this year's pretty tough to sell at this point.
What is the measurement of quality when you're looking at alfalfa, when you're looking at different hay? What are you looking for? Because I know, you know, very light rain year this year, so the conditions were different than last summer when it was rainy, and you ended up with a lot of wet hay. Not so much this year.
Yeah, they test relative feed value. They look for proteins. They look for vitamins and minerals in your hay. You know, I know guys that the dairies like to put potash through their cows because it makes them milk good. So they put potash on their alfalfa out here, and so they raise it through the plant, you know, so the animal can take it naturally like that. And it's a test. I've never went that route. I've always, if you want my hay, you can test it and you can sell it, like, or you can do with it what you want. I don't know. Necessarily go for the top of the market. I'll take a few dollars less so I don't have to, because the more you test it, the more you're guaranteeing certain things. And if the guarantee doesn't come through, you know, your people come back to you and say, well, you said this, but it didn't work out. And it's just a buffer that I do.
Where you at in your fields this time of year, August, you're wrapping it up, you're stacked in, you're done, you're going on vacation, it sounds like, you're getting ready for the Bronco season, so I know your weekends are, I mean, you got to wrap it up
here. Like I told you in the pregame here, we were going for timing for a record of getting out of the meadow, our grass hay down there. Usually that takes us about 6 weeks, you know how big that is down there, and we've had such good weather and the machines all stayed together. So we're trying to get back the second, their alfalfa. We've got second in and waiting. We have third to put up here in about, I'd say another 2 weeks. We'll be thinking about it. The neighbors look a little farther along than us, but we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're on the downhill side, going home is what we call it.
What do you hear overall about the summer for different crops in the valley, given how dry it's been? I mean, but it's a good year to farm in because it hasn't been that wet. What do you hear overall in terms of crop production? I heard that potatoes hurting a little bit just because last year there were so many, and I don't know that they're moving potatoes because of the markets recently.
Yeah, I talked to a grain guy the other day, and they had I think he said his protein was low. In his, I would assume it was beer barley, talking to the guy. Mm-hmm. But he attributed it to the heat. You know, it was too hot there for a while. And then the smoke.
From the fires.
The smoke affects us a lot. You know, you get those canopy days when the smoke's in here. And I've heard potato guys say that it really affects the potatoes.
Interesting.
Growth. Huh. I don't. But I haven't talked to anybody digging yet. The seed guys are digging, I would assume. And
a pretty good year, I would think, overall for production.
Yeah, I would say the weather was real good, other than them real hot days, because it was hot at night. You know, that's the valley's good for hot days and cool nights.
Right.
Those, what it was, we had 6-7 days there where it was like 65 at night. Pretty hard to sleep. You know how it is.
We're coming into the 50-degree overnight, which is nice. We're getting into that cool mornings and cool evenings and warm 70-degree. Perfect weather this time of year for me.
Well, that's how you make good third cut in alfalfa. Warm day and then a cool night, you know, it'll make So that's the cash crop in the hay, usually for the guys, is they can put. But with the weather like it is, you know, it's been raining in the falls now, so.
Right. Unpredictable, you never know.
Yeah, yeah. And the waters, you know, waters, I think, is really getting unpredictable.
Very, very low year. We're going to talk about water when we come back. This is the Valley Pod. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for funding to launch a community project, program, or event in Monta Vista? The Lohr Foundation is here to help. Lohr supports projects that are designed and led by locals like you. The best part, there are no complicated applications, time-consuming reports, or grant cycle deadlines. All it takes to start a funding request is a simple conversation. So reach out to the Monta Vista community officer, Yvette Atencio, at lohrfoundation.org today and take the first steps towards turning your idea into a reality.
¿Estás buscando financiamiento para lanzar un proyecto, programa o evento comunitario en Monta Vista? La Fundación LOR, L-O-R, está aquí para ayudarte. LOR apoya proyectos que son diseñados y liderados por personas locales como tú. La mejor parte, no hay solicitudes complicadas, informes que consumen mucho tiempo, ni fechas límite de convocatorias. Todo lo que necesitas para iniciar una solicitud de financiamiento es una conversación sencilla. Así que, comunícate hoy mismo con la oficial comunitaria de Monta Vista, Yvette Atencio, en lohrfoundation.org. LORFOUNDATION.ORG. Y da el primer paso para convertir tu idea en una realidad.
Hey SLV, mark your calendar for the September 13th, 3rd annual SLV Battle of the Bowls Chili Cook-Off, hosted by Alamosa KOA. Competition will be from 2 to 4 p.m. on the 13th of September. Cooks from across the valley will be cooking up mouth-watering red and green chilies and, of course, some salsa and competing in this heated but friendly battle. All proceeds go to Care Camps Foundation, a nonprofit that funds oncology camps, which give kids with cancer the chance to experience the healing powers of the outdoors. There's still time to enter the chili competition. Just call KOA at 719-589-9757. Hey, we're back. We're talking to Greg Heigl. He's also the chair of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. So water is something that you think a lot about. You've got your ranch. We've talked about cattle. We've talked about hay. We've talked about operations. And then you have water. And you wear that hat, Rio Grande Water Conservation District Board Chair, long time. How much does water consume your thinking on a day-to-day basis in terms of the conditions of the water?
Oh, every day, almost hourly.
Hourly.
You know, I live at waters. I actually planted a crop this year. It's called Sorghum Sudan that takes 60 days, or you can harvest it in 60 days. And I waited till June 10th so the freezes would quit. And then that's how many days I calculated our ditch would have water, just guessing. Uh-huh. And on the 59th day, our ditch got cut in half, which is...
Right there.
Yeah, it was pretty close. And I didn't know what I was doing. I just figured, you know, that's I could get it to there and cut it and then just start drying things up. Because when the ditch cuts in half, we go to the better crops, the older crops or older hay, or we just start shutting off. You just start taking care of the better fields on our ditch system.
Gotcha.
The way we have water. Same way in the meadow, in our grass hay, we as soon as we got cut, I shut the ditch off to the meadow. And
but you were in priority pretty well this year. All the ditches actually were in priority pretty well, yeah?
Yeah, to a lot better than we all expected, actually. You know, they ran good, but it's like now we have no, on our system, there's no wells. So once we lose water, we're done. And I understand there's a lot of ditches like that, but our ditch doesn't usually get cut. We usually have our supply all summer long. So talking about the dryness, we've done this probably 10 times since I started becoming the ditch rider, where they might have done it 10 times in the 100 years before.
Gotcha.
In this situation, you know. But we have a good ditch company, so we all know how to, we know what to do when we get to this point.
Go ahead.
Well, up until this weekend, I thought we were going to get cut into our first priority until the rain the other night, but the river actually went up a little bit yesterday and today.
One of the things that people were trying to figure out going into this water season was how much snowpack or how much more moisture was in the higher elevations. And I think there were some misreadings early on until you saw some airborne snow reports that said, hey, there's probably a little bit more water up here this year than maybe we're estimating early on. I think that happened and you had a little bit better water season.
Yeah, they did try the airborne. You know, judging the water up there is a real educated guess.
Yeah.
You know, in my experience this year, there was snow real high up top. There was a lot of snow, but you got down to the 8,500 foot elevation, and there was no snow. It was dry through that area, you know, riding. I'm in the mountains a lot riding if I can. So, yeah, it was more up there than we thought, but when it stops now, or at least in my experience nowadays, when the water runs out, it's like a switch.
Yeah.
It just stops.
And it dries, you know, and that riverbed through Alamosa right now is, for me, the driest I've ever seen it personally, and I haven't. There were decades when I didn't live here.
Yeah.
But for me, I've never seen the riverbed dry the way it is right now in Alamosa.
We probably haven't since 02. You know, in this condition, like if Craig's saying it's the driest year since then yeah, it...
When you see years like this, where does your mind go to? I mean, I guess you're just like, honestly, we need some snow.
Why do I do this? you know, because it's dry.
Yeah,
we're a high mountain desert, and, you know, I didn't expect it to, when I started doing this, that it'd be dry like this, because I've always grown up with water.
Right.
Or where I live, we have water. And
that's what's interesting about that 60-year arc here. Your age, my age, is we're seeing things we never could have anticipated or even imagined: a dry Rio Grande, a dry river through the San Luis Valley. Again, that's why I always have a hard time, or not a hard time. I like documenting this period of time, honestly, because it's not a period I ever thought I would see. And that's not a good thing. But it's a fact.
Just happening. Yeah, the only, with my relatives and stuff growing up, the only other decade that they ever talked about like this would be the 50s. They said the 50s were kind of dry. But, yeah, water's it's valuable here now. You know, it's really changing, I think. If you look at all the data out there, everything's trending down. Nothing's not even staying equal, even with sub-districts. And, you know, they're working to bring up their water tables and stuff like that, and they are. But they're still a long ways away, you know, from getting to where everybody thinks is normal. And
do you think there's still people, or do you hear people telling you, or you're hearing in conversation, that the valley, the aquifers, there's all kinds of water here and we can take it? Do you still think people think that?
No, not like 20 years ago. No, I think as a rule, they've
come to the realization.
Yeah, that is, it is getting dry here.
Yeah.
And drier. I don't, you know, you have the type of people that I would say don't care. They're going to do whatever they want to do till,
yeah,
till it's gone, for whatever they're doing. But yeah, you know, I, like you said, I was on the board I've been on the board for a lot of years, and we had a lady come in, I can't remember, I think it was from CU, and she was doing tree ring studies, and she proved how that happened and how the Indians in that part of the state drove them out, you know, that's a pretty historic drought, and that's what I think about now is, are we going to that, the Southwest, not necessarily the Valley, because the whole Southwest is dry as a rule.
Well, what's interesting, and Owen and I talk about this a lot, and that's the system, weather system the Valley's in. It's different than the I-25 corridor. It's different than the west of us along the western slope. We have, if you study that, we're in a different jet stream. And 3.5 degrees warmer here in Alamosa over the past decades, drying faster than any region in the state of Colorado, as fast as the driest, fastest drying regions in the Southwest, the San Luis Valley, Alamosa. That's why we have such great weather too, because we miss those systems up a 25. We're not the same as the Denver metro area. We have our own little zone here. It's fascinating to watch that.
It is geographic location. It is.
Yeah, the mountains do some interesting things for us.
I remember Harvey Tyler. When he was with the Weather Service, we were young and wild, and he'd explain it to me how they'd, the system rolls up in the Southwest and makes it bounce out, and if we hit just right, it dumps rain on us, in the valley, the way the mountains are. But if it comes from that side, it slams into the Sangres and then pushes the water that way. And, it's just how I learned how he...
Well, that's a name from the past, Harvey Tyler. I forgot, and I can picture when you said that. Yeah. I could remember this guy.
Well, like now I watch the weather because we're haying, and last few days they've said, we're in a flood watch all the way around us right now. But the weather's coming like this from the Northwest. Well, my life, we get rain, but you don't get a lot of rain from the Northwest. It's always the southwesterly flow. When Arizona gets rain and San Diego, we get rain.
Right.
That's not happening. You talk about that. The forest fires in California, the moisture's not coming up that way.
It's really, as we see and we know, because we live here, but the data always proves that the Valley's a very fascinating location to hang out in, to grow up in, to live in. We're isolated in a way. We have our own thing. It's a very interesting place to be in.
That's actually why I stayed when we got out of school and did our things. I always thought to myself, well, I got a ranch or have access to a ranch, and there's not very many places like that left in the world, and you can go anywhere from here.
Right. That's the trick right there. You can go anywhere from here.
Go from here and.
Yeah. Hey, it's good to catch. We want to ask you one more thing before we let you go. Then it's good to see you. Next year, 2026, as you know, Talk Water will end with water. Big trials, right? 2026 water court, Subdistrict 1, plan of water management's going before the court. What is your anticipation or your thoughts? Just thinking about that particular case, because you've been working on this plan of water management, Fourth Amendment, for 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
And now it's finally going to get to a court in January of 2026, that Subdistrict 1 plan. And then that there's an alternative group out there that has their own ideas. My reading in all this is this is a big court case coming up. Give us some sense, some context, some perspective there.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge court case, actually, for water in the valley, because like Subdistrict 1, I'm not sure what the number is, but they're up to probably $60-70 million just in their subdistrict of trying to reduce their pumping and stuff like that. And if a breakout group can go out and do their own, I think it would fracture the community type thing. There'd be, water's worth a lot of money. This is going to do this. I'm going to sell my land. Usually your neighbor can't buy it. It's got to be a corporation to come in or, outside money to farm. And it's happening. It's obvious in this valley that they've figured out that we can produce food, so the big companies will come in and Yeah, Chris, you asked a question about that. I 500, if they win the case and $500 goes through, that's a lot to farm.
Mm-hmm.
I would quit, me, the way my situation is.
Interesting.
I don't have enough outside to help me to pay for that kind of a pumping fee, you know, to raise my crops. So I think, you know, they're going to have to do it to curb the pumping, but it's going to hurt the what I consider family guys, little guys, 4 and 5 sprinklers. You know, it's going to be tough on them to lay 3 to 4 quarters out a year to cover their water for one. You know, you need 2 or 3 quarters maybe to do 5. You know, I'm not sure of all the economics up there, but I just think it'll be tough either way.
But you also have seen it that because you supported the plan of water management that is going before the court. You support that plan, even though, to what you're saying, it could hurt small farms.
Yeah, well, it was the reason why I did it is because when this started, it was the first alternative was the state to come in and just shut everybody down and do it backdoor. Then you start getting your water and proving to the state that you have enough water to run your wells and that. Well, I don't think the Valley would have lived through that 4 or 5 years of transition. So doing it this way, you know, gave the community the way to figure out their own problem.
Right.
And Subdistrict 1's a big area, and they pump a lot. It's hard to get people to stop. So without a police action or, you know, allocation action or whatever you want to do up there, they went the money way. And from the beginning, money wasn't supposed to be a deterrent. But it's morphed into that is going to be the deterrent is can you afford to pump?
Yeah. Yeah.
To keep going, and it'll work.
You can tell how difficult, how, I don't know, controversial is the right word, but you can tell what a big case this is going to be in January just by watching you try to put your head around it, because this is a big case, Subdistrict 1, Fourth Amendment Plan of Water Management.
But the last 14 years into trying to get these sub-districts to work, and if the court case goes the other way, I would think one's going to have a hard time surviving at the way they're set up.
Yeah,
you know, there'll be drastic changes to get it to be more like you're going to have water to play the game, and the rest of the people won't.
Well, that's something we're going to watch in 2026 when that hits the court in January 2026. Good to see you again. We're going to go to lunch. It's Greg Heigl. He's with the Rio Grande Water Conservation District, cattle rancher here in Alamosa County, runs Heigl Ranch. You've been listening to the Valley Pod. The Valley Pod is produced by Owen Woods. It's part of the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. See you around the valley.
Hey everyone, this is Hannah Eubanks with a Valley Calendar update. August has come and gone, so here are the events you can look forward to for the first week of September. This Tuesday in Del Norte is the kickoff parade for the Covered Wagon Days. The parade starts at 10 a.m. on Main. Head to the Rio Grande Farm Park on Wednesday from 3 to 7 for the Mercadillo. Thursday night is Big Screen on the Green with a special showing of the movie Soul. This event is free. Head to the Richardson Hall lawn at 6 p.m. to enjoy. The Monta Vista Farmers Market is on Friday starting at 9 a.m. Friday evening, head to downtown Alamosa to enjoy Roaming Rhythms presented by Alamosa Live Music Association and visit Alamosa's First Friday series. Saturday morning, Alamosa will have their Farmers Market starting at 8 a.m. This Saturday is the annual SLV Potato Festival. Head to Chapman Park in Monta Vista to join in on the fun. You can find details for these events and more at AlamosaCitizen.com. If you have an event coming up, submit it to the Valley Calendar. Head to the Valley Calendar page on AlamosaCitizen.com, click online form, and give us the details. That'll do it for now. Have a great week.